So, I was thinking, you can open your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 19. 1 Kings 19 is where we're going to start tonight. We are in the middle of a series. We are working our way through a chunk of the story that the Bible tells. And this is the part of the story in the Old Testament when God has established the kingdom of Israel, in theory, to be his model kingdom. If you ever walked into one of those brand new apartment buildings, and they have a model apartment. Has anybody ever been into one of these model apartments? You know, and it's like clearly never actually been lived in, because like 14 seconds living in that puppy, and it would not look like that anymore. The idea of a model apartment is that it's supposed to inspire you to think, what would it be like to live here? Well, God wanted to inspire all of humankind to wonder what it would be like to live directly under his leadership. And so he picked one particular nation, the nation of Israel, in order to inspire them, in order to give them special rules and everything so that they could be the model kingdom. Not model in the sense of like, you know, the kingdom everybody looked up to, but model in the sense of model home or model apartment. It's they were supposed to show everybody, man, if you do it God's way, here's how awesome it's going to be. Unfortunately, they failed. And so there was constant rebellion and disobedience to God, and so the nation of Israel looked just like any other nation, going so far, as a matter of fact, to having a civil war. Just one full generation after one of the greatest kings that ever lived, just a few years after the wisest king that ever lived, there was a civil war that fractured the nation in half, and from that point on, the country fails to ever really faithfully be the model kingdom they were supposed to be. So God is consistently sending to them a series of prophets, men who are his royal ambassadors or representatives. God gives them messages to deliver to the people so that they can understand where he's at. And all of these messages, generally speaking, are calling God's people back to faithfulness to God. And so this is a perfect opportunity for us to practice learning or practice understanding what it means to hear from God. This is something people long for all the time. And I'll be honest, about half the time people say they've heard from God, I think they're wrong. Just because somebody says they heard from God doesn't mean they did hear from God. As a matter of fact, a large percentage of the time, I think that the people who have really heard from God are very hesitant to use that kind of language. They just do what they're told. And they don't need to talk about it too much. But, I want us to understand what it means to hear from God, because God has promised to have a personal, individual, private relationship with every one of us through his Spirit that is a gift to every follower of Jesus Christ. And so we have this amazing opportunity to hear from God personally in our lives. And I want to practice, or I want to help us learn what it looks like to hear from God. So who better than these individual messengers that God sent and we were talking about this. I was in a meeting with our interns just a few moments ago. Here was the bar, by the way, for these guys. If they ever claimed that they had heard from God and they were wrong, they were stoned to death. So they had to be right. Stoned to death. So just in case you don't know what that looks like, they would drag you to the edge of a cliff, throw you down a cliff. When you got to the bottom, they would probably have like your legs broken and stuff because you'd fallen down a cliff recently. And so then they would start pushing the biggest rocks they could find over the cliff after you until they had buried you in rocks. It's one of those things you just don't come back from. And this is how they were treated. This is God's command, was that anybody who prophesied wrongly, that was how you were supposed to treat them. So getting it right was a really big deal. So these are some men that we can learn from about how to truly hear from God. These are some men we can learn God's character from so that we can properly judge when we think we might have heard from God. Does this match the character of God the way that the Bible reveals it? So this is a great opportunity for us to explore what does it mean truly to hear from God. So as I was thinking about all of this, getting ready to look at 1 Kings chapter 19 today, I was thinking about one of the folks who used to be on staff that some of you might remember. One of our children's pastors several years ago was a young lady named Natasha. She has since, yay for Pastor Natasha, she has since married a wonderful guy and moved up to southern Canada somewhere. And so, and this happens, right? God actually genuinely calls people to other places, and she did a great job here, but we were pleased and honored to send her off. But, I was thinking about her story, because her story was interesting. She was our children's pastor here. She's married to a children's pastor there. She does children's ministry all the time. When she first interned for us, we have this process that we take all of our interns through, whatever kind of intern they are. We essentially take them through every basic ministry role in our church. They serve with little babies. They serve with kids. They serve with teenagers. They serve with adults. They serve in like as a greeter. They serve behind the scenes cleaning. And everything in the middle. The idea is, let's give them the widest possible array of experiences and see what sticks. And the one thing I remember Pastor Natasha told me before she started going through the battery of ministry opportunities we were going to give her is that she knew she just wasn't super interested in children's ministry. And then, a year later, we hired her, or a year and a half later, we hired her as our children's pastor. Because she had a profound experience. That experience was that at the time, our children's ministry, All City Kids, was being run by Pastor Kurt's wife, Jen. And Jen is an incredibly charismatic, incredibly inspiring leader who is incredibly gifted just about at anything she ever does. And so walking into kids' ministry being run by Jen Lang, Natasha walked in and was like, this is not what I had ever envisioned. This is amazing. And something was awakened in her that changed the course of her life forever. She chose to bring herself under the leadership of Jen Lang, and that changed her life forever. She is still a children's person to this day, because sometimes when you allow yourself to be mentored by somebody, they rub off. Have you ever had that kind of moment in your life where one of the most significant decisions, and this is the thing we're going to be focusing on tonight, one of the most significant decisions you can make if you want to move forward in your relationship with God, one of the most significant decisions you can make if you want to learn to hear better from God is to decide who is going to influence you, who is going to mentor you. And so we're going to look today, last week we looked at a man named Elijah. Today we're going to look at the man he mentored, a man named Elisha. But before we do that, I want to let you know about two things that are coming up, just so that you don't forget about them. Number one, 8:30 a.m. on Saturday morning, this very Saturday, ladies, it is finally here. The Women's Conference is starting 8:30 a.m. on Saturday. You do not want to miss this. It is not too late to find childcare. It is not too late to reorganize your life. It is not too late to cancel an appointment. It is not too late. This is going to be a great opportunity for God to do something amazing in your life. So I hope that you come, and ladies, I hope you come with expectation that you are going to encounter God. So come on out for that. And then this Saturday night, just 11 and a half hours later, 11 and a half hours later at 8 p.m., we are going to be having a special prayer meeting at our brand new Revere location over on 19 Coolidge Street in Revere. I am so excited about this. Guys, if you have not been over there, and you are free, if you're not free on Saturday night, I understand you can only do what you can do. But if you are in any way free, I really want to encourage you to try to make it over there, because you will catch the vision of what we're trying to do in a very different way walking into the building. Because I am hoping and praying that what East Coast International Church is getting ready to do in Revere is the first step on a far larger journey. And I want you guys to get what we're doing there because it's really exciting. I said this a couple of weeks ago, maybe Sunday morning when I was announcing this, but you know, how many of you have been positively impacted by East Coast International Church? My hand is up. I am so glad East Coast International Church was here when I needed it. Somebody in Revere needs East Coast International Church to be there when they need it. And so we're going to make that happen. And even if you are not part of the Revere launch team, I want you to know what's going on, because I want you to be praying for what's going on, because I want God's heart for that project to capture you so that you can be excited, because this is what we are doing as a church. Even if this is your primary location where you worship every Sunday, we as a church, this is the thing we're doing. So I want you to be on board with us. So I hope you come over there. I hope you pray with us. I hope this launches you into a brand new season of your life where you pray more than you've ever prayed before. Because really, it's not a Revere service. It's really a prayer service that happens to be at a Revere location. Make sure you come if you can. We'd love to see you. All right, now back to 1 Kings, back to Elijah and Elisha. I want you to do your best to pay attention tonight, because one very important rule of mentoring that you have to grasp is that if you are going to mentor somebody, please make sure their name is different enough from yours that if somebody has to talk about you and them all over the place, that it's easy to follow. Elijah and Elisha, this is not fair to any teacher ever. So if I muddle them up, please make sure you know who I'm talking about. All right, so Elijah is the guy we talked about last week. He had that fight with the prophets of Baal up on the mountain, called Fire Down from Heaven. It was great. So he is an amazing, powerful, and profound prophet. But like any man of God, any woman of God, his time eventually has to come to an end. And God's plan for your mission in life always transcends your life. You hear that? Like, God's plan for your mission in life always transcends your life. So you always have to be looking for, how is God going to keep this thing going? What is God's plan to make this last? And God's plan for Elijah's ministry was this man named Elisha. Now, Elijah, we don't know a lot about him, but Elisha, we learn quite a bit just in a couple of verses about him. And so in 1 Kings 19:19, just a few verses before this, God had said to Elijah, go and get Elisha and anoint him. They used to signify the beginning of somebody's ministry back then by pouring oil on them. It was symbolic of the fact that the Holy Spirit was going to take up special residence in this person. And so they would pour oil. And so he said, God said to Elijah, go and anoint Elisha to be your successor. And here is the way that story plays out in 1 Kings 19:19. So Elijah went and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, plowing a field. There were 12 teams of oxen in the field, and Elisha was plowing with the 12th team. Elijah went over to him and threw his cloak around his shoulders and then walked away. Elisha left the oxen standing there, ran after Elijah, and said to him, first, let me go and kiss my father and mother goodbye, and then I will go with you. We're going to pause right there. A couple things I want to take note of. First of all, note Elisha's starting position here. Elisha starts off with a lot to lose. I was just thinking about how many of you remember Pastor Roy's amazing sermon about this? Anybody, like, I was thinking about this and like making sure I don't re-quote him because it was great. But I'm going to have to hit a couple of the same ideas here because it's an important story. But the first thing you need to know about Elisha is that he had a lot to lose. He was a rich man. He had multiple teams of oxen that people were working with. He had people working with him. So he was doing okay for himself, which means he had a lot to risk. He had a secure future ahead of him. And there was a very good chance that he was going to have to walk away from that. And so Elijah comes up to him. He throws his coat over him as a symbolic act of saying, hey, why don't you come with me? And Elisha, needless to say, it almost looks at first like he has no pause in him, right? Like, okay, he just walks away, goes after Elisha. But then it's almost like his initial gut was, yeah, let me just go right after Elijah and go with him. But then like 10 steps later, he realized, hold on a second. And so he says, hold on a minute, let me just run home real quick, and then I'll be right back. If you ever notice, when Jesus shows up on the scene centuries later, somebody tries this with Jesus. Hey, let me just go say bye to my parents. Jesus says, no, come with me now or don't bother. So Jesus raises the bar, but Elijah allows Elisha to run home real quick for a minute and then come back. There's a little bit of a pause, and I understand that pause because Elisha has something to lose here. So that's the way it begins for Elisha, but Elisha decides he's going to take this risk. And the thing I want you to notice is that Elisha, in this moment, as far as we can tell from the Bible, has never heard directly from God. This is not a calling where suddenly light shines down and all of a sudden, you know, there are like birds singing and like, you know, the angelic choirs show up and a deep throaty voice like, Elisha, like none of that happens in this moment. All he gets is some guy walking up to him, throwing his coat on him, and then without a word, walking away. You know, hey, what is that? Elijah from the beginning does not make this easy for Elisha. But more interestingly, God from the very beginning does not make this easy for Elisha. We all want those special spiritual moments with lights and angels and loud voice, deep throaty voices, right? Like, but many of us, like Elisha, do not begin our story that way. Many of us, our story with God seems very ordinary and very full of challenges. And that's Elisha's beginning of his story. Over the next couple of however many years it was, Elisha is mentored by Elijah. So he probably just followed him around and watched everything that Elijah was doing. And he watched and he watched and he watched. And Elijah did all the primary ministry, and Elisha just watched and followed and watched and followed and watched and followed, and that was about it. Until there came a moment where it was Elijah's last day. Elijah's last day on earth. Elijah knew it was the end. And interestingly enough, Elisha, we don't know how, but Elisha knew it was the end. And so we're going to pick up the story right there. This is in 2 Kings chapter 2, just a couple of pages forward or the next book forward. 2 Kings chapter 2. And you can read it there, but the basic story of what happens to Elijah in that chapter, in that couple, about 15 verses of 2 Kings chapter 2, they are traveling together. Elijah and Elisha are traveling together. And Elijah at one point says, hey, I'm going to go off into the desert alone. I want you to stay here. And Elisha says, no, I'm not leaving you. He had learned something about being mentored. And that was, stay with the guy who's mentoring you. If he goes, you go. If he stops, you stop. You know, and I this is an important lesson. This is a very, very important lesson. It was very good for Elijah to say, hey, you don't have to come with me on this one. But it was great for Elisha to say, no, I'm going with you on this one. If you want to be mentored by somebody, go where they're going, do what they're doing, follow. Follow with everything you've got in you. You know, this has been a huge part of my life story. I'm a number two guy at our church. I talk about this all the time. I've been led by Pastor Kurt. And it's funny to me to see the ways that this ends up hitting my personal life. I am currently reading a book because Pastor Kurt mentioned it. And I was like, oh, that sounds good. And if I know Pastor Kurt's reading a book, I start reading it if I in any way can, just because if he thinks it's a good book, I probably have something to learn from that. So I'm reading this random book about Martin Luther, a guy who died like 500 years ago. But, you know, you follow your leader. And Elisha is choosing to follow his leader in this moment. And so he follows him, and the first thing that happens, they come to a river, and Elijah takes off his cloak, maybe the exact same cloak that he had called Elisha with. He takes off his cloak, he rolls it up, he hits the river, and the river spreads out, and they walk across on dry land. Does this sound familiar? This is an old story that these guys both knew and had the faith to assume if there's a river in the way, God can stop it. This is not a problem. So he rolls up his cloak, that hits the water, goes across on dry ground, whatever, and they're in the middle of the desert. And as soon as they get across, notice this, as soon as Elisha had been reminded of the power of God, Elijah stops and says, essentially, this is it. We're done. I'm gonna be done now. How can I bless you before we move on? And Elisha says, the one thing I want is a double portion of your spirit. Now, just to be real clear, what he's not saying is, I want to be twice as good as you. That is not what he's saying. What he's saying, back in the day, the way that they divvied up property when somebody passed away is that every legally potential heir would get one portion of the person's remaining goods. So if there were five kids, every kid would get a fifth. Except they would actually divide it into sixths. And the oldest kid would get two of the portions, and everybody else would get one portion, because the oldest kid was responsible for keeping the family going. So whatever the family's business interests were, whatever the family's financial responsibilities were, the oldest kid was responsible for that, and he got an extra portion in order to deal with his personal responsibilities with one portion, and the family responsibilities with the other portion. And so this was, the double portion guy was always the guy who was keeping the family business going. It was the guy who was assuming dad's responsibilities when dad passes away. And so when Elisha says to Elijah, I want a double portion of your spirit, what he's saying is, spiritually, you have incredible, incredible gifts that God has given you. But God has given you those gifts for a very specific purpose. And we both know, and this is clearly true, the backstory tells us this, we both know that I am supposed to be responsible for all of this work that you have left undone. So if I'm responsible for all this work that's left undone, if I'm picking up your responsibilities, I better get that extra chunk of giftedness from you that only your direct inheritor would receive. I don't want just the responsibilities, I want the giftedness along with it. Because Elijah had a profound giftedness. He could bring God into just about every situation. As a matter of fact, and I just want to pause really briefly on this word spirit. The word spirit is an incredibly vague word. Like, painfully vague. Like, you know, the most frequent place I hear this word is, I'm spiritual but not religious. Which I think means I feel warm feelings about things that are good but don't actually have to change my behavior to match anybody else's rules. I think that's what that means. But, you know, when I started saying that, I didn't mean it quite as much of a dig as it came out being. But that was quite a... I mean, I do think that, but I think it lovingly. Can we at least say that? I think it lovingly. But do you know what I'm saying? Like, spiritual means something so... Do not tweet that, Travis. Oh man. But the recording stops now. But you know, spiritual really just means vague in a lot of people's minds. It means something very unclear. And so I want to pause to make sure we all know what spirit is. Because spirit is a very important idea in the Bible. The idea of spirit is first demonstrated in the very first couple of verses in the Bible. It's the Spirit of God that is hovering over the darkness and chaos that is about to bring order and form to the darkness and chaos. The very first act of spirit in the Bible is to bring order out of chaos. It is literally the opposite of vague. It is very intentional. It is very orderly. It is very clear. It is the Spirit of God that brings creation in seven specific days in a way that makes very logical sense, that is very orderly and very intentional. And then it is the Spirit of God that takes a man, like God forms a body, just like this. You were wondering, weren't you? Who was wondering? Anybody? You're all like, what on earth? It's got to be up there for a reason. Here we go. I'm getting there. God takes a body. This is no more human than like the stage or the stand is, right? Like that's not human. Even if I made it out of all the component parts of an actual person, if I could put the atoms together, it wouldn't actually be human. And so God forms the physical aspect of a human. And then God does something really important. God breathes on it. And if I were really magical, it would have turned into a real person. But I'm not. But that's okay. But God takes something that is subhuman, and by breathing on it, he turns it into a real human. And he says, let me put my image, let me put my something about this that reminds the world of who I am, my reflection onto this creation, this physical creation. And what he's doing, the word for spirit is this old word for breathing or breath. It really means the movement of the air. And the idea is that God moved the air and we became alive. Not just physically alive. Animals are physically alive. Animals are lovely, but we are alive in a whole different sense, aren't we? You know, if you look at, I heard this just the other day, and this is a great distinction of what spirit is. Humans have spirits. I'm not convinced animals do. I would have said that more strongly if there weren't some animal lovers in the room. But one of the fascinating differences between animals and people is shown to us in the first throne room scene of the book of Revelation, where God is sitting on his throne, and these four creatures that represent the created order, all the animals and everything, are flying around God, and they're declaring how holy God is and how good God is, and they're just celebrating him forever. And it's this picture of what creation is supposed to be like. Creation is supposed to be constantly, harmoniously bringing praise and celebration to God. But then, surrounding that are these 24 men who represent the authorities God has created to govern the world, which is humanity. God created humanity to be the governing agency in the world. And so there are these 24 men representing humanity's governance, and they add to the worship. They start off by saying, holy is God, or worthy is God. But then they say this one important word that nothing else in creation could say. Worthy is God because. And they go on to explain why God is worthy. You see, all of creation can instinctively understand that God is worthy. But only humanity can understand God's worth and respond by choice. Everything else, it's just instinct. So a cat or a whale or whatever sees beauty in the world, and there can be an instinctive response. But a person can see beauty in the world and say, God is worthy because God is a good creator. And that one word, because, sets us aside from all other creation, and that is part of what was breathed into us when we were given God's Spirit, the ability to understand the way God can understand, the ability to be aware the way God is aware, and therefore the ability to judge and govern the way God judges and governs. That's what Spirit is all about. Spirit is that aspect of who we are that allows us to both to recognize and represent God. Spirit is the aspect of a person that allows us to recognize and represent God. I can recognize, wow, that is clearly an act of God. Not you're all looking at the sign. I don't mean the restore sign, it's a lovely sign. But you can look at a sunrise and think that's an act of God. Or you can look at a moment where your tank was on empty and you get a card in the mail with the money you needed. Or you can look at the moment where you happen to run into a friend and they tell you about that apartment, and then you suddenly have a new apartment that you never thought you'd be able to get. And everybody in the world might be able to say, oh, I don't know what happened there, but you are spiritually alive. Your spirit is alive in a different way, and you are able to say, oh, clearly that was God. It is your spirit that allows you to recognize, but then it is your spirit that also allows you to represent God. You can become that for somebody else by the way you act, by the way you talk, by the way you respond. You can become the thing that reminds somebody else that there is a God who loves and governs the world. Isn't that amazing? That's what spirit is. and your spirit desperately needs to be fed. But that's a whole different sermon we're going to talk about later at some many other times. But so he says, I want a double portion of your spirit, that thing inside of you that can invoke the presence of God and allow others to see God too. I want double on that. Because if I'm going to have your responsibilities, I want your giftedness. And so Elijah says, if you see me go, you'll get it. And just a few moments later, Elijah is taken by God's angelic fiery army in an angelic fiery chariot up into heaven, across the divide from the natural to the supernatural. And Elijah sees it. I mean, Elisha sees it. He sees the whole thing. You know, and I love this point that to the very end, Elisha's mentor was not creating an easy road in front of him. He was presenting challenges for him to overcome. He didn't say, oh yeah, I want you to have that too. Here's my coat, go for it. He said, here's the challenge you have to overcome in order to get what you want. And that's how mentors act. That is always how mentors act. Because mentors are calling you up. Mentors are inspiring you to be better. I had this conversation with my son this morning. Last night, he didn't quite finish his homework because we were doing some other things. So this morning it was sitting out, and he had written answers to his homework, and he said, Wesley, that's not good enough. And he said, well, but it's true. And I said, yeah, I know it is. Your answers are 100% true, but they are quality-wise a second grader answer, and you are a fifth grader. And he said, well, I want to go back to being a second grader. And I said, I know, it's hard, isn't it? And he said, it is hard. And I said, I know, that's why I'm encouraging you to do that. It's my job not to make it hard, but to remind you that you can do hard things. It's not my job to make it less hard. It's my job to remind you you can do hard things. Now, he was more frustrated and I was more frustrated, to be completely transparent about this moment. Many of these moments are warm and fuzzy for me and my son, but this was not. And I wish I had been able to say it as warmly as I just said it now, but the heart of it is that. The heart of it is I need to inspire my son to do hard things, because that will call my son up. And Elijah is doing that to Elisha. He's saying, man, fine. And let's be honest, this was a reasonable challenge. Stick it out for the next 20 minutes, no matter how crazy and weird it seems. Seems like not a big deal of a challenge when you realize that the guy who's offering the challenge, whose role Elisha wants to step into, once squared off toe-to-toe against 400 guys and won. All of a sudden, stick it out for 20 minutes is a fairly minimal challenge, right? Like, but it was also a very fitting challenge, because Elisha wanted to be able to bring the presence of God into situations. And to bring the presence of God, you have to be able to see the presence of God. You have to be able to see beyond the natural into the supernatural. And so what Elijah essentially said was, fine, let's test and see how far we've gotten you. Here's your final exam. When I die, will you be able to see? Well, not when he died, because he didn't die. But when I cross over into the supernatural realm, how far into that realm will you see? Very fitting challenge for someone who wanted to step into the role of Elijah, who wanted to be a prophet. And what's amazing is how much it pays off. Remember, this was all about seeing flaming, fiery chariots. Just a few moments, a few years later, I don't know if it was a week later, a month later, 6 years later, but four chapters later in 2 Kings chapter 6, right? Don't you wish there was like a little timeline, but they didn't care about that, so we don't get that. But in 2 Kings chapter 6, there's this amazing moment where Elisha and his servant are in this walled city, and their physical enemy has surrounded them, and the servant says to Elisha, how are we going to get out of this? They're everywhere. I mean, literally, they're everywhere. And Elisha says, oh. And he realizes something about his servant, that his servant is missing the most important details. And so Elisha prays for his servant and says, God, why don't you show him what's really there? and a servant suddenly sees the flaming chariots. The same flaming chariots Elisha had first seen back when his master had been taken up into heaven. Now, what's interesting about this story is Elisha doesn't start seeing the chariots in this moment. Elisha apparently had developed the ability to see the flaming chariots all the time. So he wasn't saying, oh man, I wonder if there's flaming chariots there. He could see them all the time because he had taken the final exam years ago and had mastered the art of seeing into the supernatural realm back then and had never let go of that skill. He had received the double portion from Elijah that he had asked for, and here's the proof of it in this story right here. And here he's passing it along to somebody else. He's praying for them and saying, God, what you have taught me over years to see, let this man see. God, what I know with confidence is there, what I can see because I have learned to see the supernatural realm, God, I pray that he would be able to see too because I have no worries about this. And what's amazing is when Elisha shows him the flaming chariots, you'd think that that would be the moment Elisha would say, so see, we have nothing to do. But that is not what Elisha does. Elisha goes off into high activity mode. He takes matters into his own hands. You see, when he realizes the provision of God, it doesn't inspire him to do nothing. It inspires him to take greater risks. It doesn't inspire him to say, you know what, God's got this one. I can sit this one out. It inspires him to say, all right, God's got this one. What part am I going to play in that? And that's a really big difference. So there's a couple things I want to walk away from this story of Elisha with. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to get into several of the other prophets in the Old Testament. Really, we're going to break the prophets in the Old Testament down into two big categories. One category is what we're going to call the oral prophets, prophets who just did speaking. This is Elijah and Elisha and people like that we've talked about so far. But then some of the prophets, their words get actually captured, like written down. And so we are going to rather cleverly call them the written prophets. And so I don't mean they just wrote stuff. I just mean we captured their words. And so in the next couple of weeks, we're going to go through some of the written prophets as well. But before we do, I want to pause on this couple of ideas in Elisha's life as we are practicing hearing from God. First thing, if you want to hear from God, prepare yourself for a divine destiny. Prepare yourself. Elisha starts his story, as far as we know it, with taking a giant risk. He walks away from his financial security. He walks away from his family. He walks away from everything he knows to go into the unknown, into the financially risky, into the arena. You know, I mean, if you're wealthy, when you are middle-aged, you're probably going to be safe and okay. When Elisha goes through his life, following God's path for him, he is going to be at risk every day, because he's going to be going up against people who hate God. He's going to be going up against people who have no respect for God. He is going to be expected to deliver messages that will make people very uncomfortable. He was willing to take the risk. If you want to hear from God, you have to be willing to give up safety and security. Number two, if you're preparing for divine destiny, if you want to hear from God, be mentored by someone who is currently like what you want to become. Be mentored by someone who is currently like what you want to become. Who do you want to be in 10 years from now? I mean, think about that. We're going to talk about this in just a moment in our discussion groups. Who do you want to be 10 years from now, specifically in your relationship with God? Sometimes we have to start shorter. Who do you want to be a year from now? If you're in your relationship with God, where do you want to be in a year? All right, now let's multiply that times 10. Where do you want to be 10 years from now in your relationship with God? Who's like that now? Or at least, who's the closest you can get to that now? Get that person influencing you. Get that person to influence you because you will become like them. That is what mentoring does. That's what Elisha did with Elijah. And then finally, when you're thinking about a mentor, make sure you have amazingly high standards. Amazingly high standards. There's nothing wrong with having a high standard for someone who's going to influence your life. As a matter of fact, you should. God called you to be a person of incredible influence, and you are not going to become a person of incredible influence by following after mediocre people. You are not going to become a person of uncompromising character by following after people who compromise. You will become a person of uncompromising character and incredible influence by following after people who have proven over and over and over again that they are people of uncompromising character and incredible influence. Seek them out and let them influence you. Just show up. Spend time. I used to watch people do this with Pastor Kurt all the time. He would be like painting a room and like 15 people would show up to paint with him just because they wanted to like be there. Right? Like this is good thinking. We were at a pastor's meeting just a little while back and a staff member from a different church, her pastor said, "Hey, do you want to go to this meeting with me?" It was a really influential meeting. And she was not on staff very long. And she said, "Nah, I just don't feel like it." And I looked at everybody on staff at our church and I was like, she had this opportunity, not just to be with her pastor, but to be with her pastor in an influential moment. And she just, for no apparent reason, said, "You know what? It's just a little inconvenient. You know what? Be inconvenienced. That's what mentoring's about. Like, volunteer to be inconvenienced. Volunteer to go into situations that are complicated. Volunteer to be out of your depth. That is the point of being mentored." And so that's really what Elisha was all about. Elisha's life as we know it is so much about being a person who is mentored, being a person who is influenced, and therefore someone who becomes a profound influencer, who determines the course of the nation's history for the next generation because he allowed himself to be mentored and influenced. So in just a moment, we're going to break up into some discussion groups and talk about this because I want you to be thinking these questions. Where do you want to be in a year? Where do you want to be in 10 years? Again, just to emphasize, I mean, where do you want to be in your spiritual life in a year and 10 years? I don't mean like you want to have a master's degree or you want to be working at some company. Unless that is specifically related to your spiritual journey, that's the slice of the pie we're going to talk about tonight. And then, who can you get to help you get there?